right, we are really change this topic now, and Rich is going to tell us about his Bible software.
Okay, we'll see if the video starts. Yes. Okay, so what if Bible translation could be more like this? That was a video showing computer generating a translation. So thousands of languages still need Bible translation, but the current process requires a lot of time and money. All the Word Bible Translators has developed a new approach that can produce accurate and easily understandable translations with greatly decreased time and cost. Okay, so these are my colleagues. Todd Allman is the president. He gave 25 part-time years of his life to develop this translation software, which I consider a big commitment. And Stephen Beal, he was formerly with Wycliffe Bible Translators, and Jeremiah Chung at the bottom. And all of them have contributed a lot to this project. So here's the problem. More than 100 million people don't have a single word of the Bible in their own language. And more than 1 billion people don't have the complete Bible in their own language. In other words, they might have parts, maybe even the New Testament, but they don't have the whole thing. Translating even just the New Testament takes a lot of time and money. Typically, adding the cost of the people translating plus all the support staff, typically 12 to 15 years, and a cost ranging from $500,000 to $1 million. And typically, the result is just a single translation that's appropriate for an adult church audience. So this is our solution. We generate translations from the pre-analyzed meaning of the Bible text. We have a rules-based system that produces high-quality draft translations. So this is not a statistical approach that tries to make a best guess. It's a mechanistic approach. It's not like Google Translate that depends on a large body of translated text. We can translate anything that's been analyzed and we have the language information for. Draft translations that the computer produces are then edited by mother tongue translators to ensure quality translation. The software can automatically generate different translations tailored to specific audiences, like an unchurched group of children, and the speed of translation is greatly increased. So this is a sketch of our system. So the tan items at the center, the translation software up there, and the language independent analysis, those are done once and for all. The blue bubbles show the items that have to be done for each specific target language. So those will ultimately determine the cost and time involved in the project. So up at the top right, we have to enter the vocabulary and grammar information for a particular language. Then given the analysis and that information, the software can automatically generate a translation of the Bible. Then that's edited by mother tongue translators to produce a presentable draft translation. At that point, we would be finished with the process, and then missionaries can do whatever they want to it. So this is an example of a verse, Esther 4:16, showing the unedited computer translations. So in the middle, we have a translation for churched adults. So I'll read that. Esther told Hathach to say to Mordecai, "Call all of the Jews who are in Susa. Tell the Jews to fast for 3 days and for three nights. My servants and I will also fast for 3 days and for three nights. Then I'll go to the king. Although I'll be breaking the king's law, I'll go to him, and if I die, I'll die." So there are a couple of things you can notice about this. First of all, in our system, the sentence, which we call a proposition, is the basic element of our communication. So we can't start a verse with a quotation mark, which you don't see here, but it's up there at the upper left. So we have to put, Esther told Hathach to say to Mordecai. Another thing is, here it says, I will fast for 3 days and for three nights. So if you were translating this in English, you'd probably just say for 3 days and three nights. You wouldn't say for twice. And that's an instance where the final editing can make it sound more natural. Okay, now on the right, we have the translation for the unchurched children. And the differences are the red and blue items. Now, the red item in the middle column, to fast, has a complex concept of fasting. Now, I know that in the Philippines, where we're doing translations, when they present, they have a word for fast, but it's in Tagalog, but it's not understood by children. So we actually represent, in our semantic or meaning representations of the Bible, we represent it with the expanded form, which is not to eat food so that they can pray. That's how we translate fasting. But we can make a complex rule that converts that to fast, if they have that word and if they want to use it. The blue items are implicit information, which for an unchurched population would help you understand the text. So instead of just saying Susa, it says the city named Susa. And after asking that people would pray, it says the Jews should pray so that God will protect me. So we can turn on and off these options to either expand the complex terms or to include the implicit information. So currently, we have about 20% of the Bible analyzed. So in order to use this to its full capability, we need to analyze the rest of the Bible. Then we'll be ready to translate the entire Bible into many languages. Currently, we distribute the translations of Bible portions through illustrated books and free illustrated phone apps. You'd be surprised, I was surprised, that in third world countries, there's a huge percentage of the population that has smartphones. We're currently producing translations of Bible books in three languages of the Philippines. We're also working on translation projects in Vanuatu, which is in the South Pacific, Taiwan, and Indonesia. Almost none of the languages we're working on have an Old Testament translation, and some of them have no Christian literature at all. So, we estimate, after we finish the analysis of the entire Bible, that with about 6 months' effort from a member of our team working with a missionary language expert, we can create the vocabulary and grammar to describe a new language for use in our software. And if it's a language closely related to one we've already analyzed, then the time is significantly cut, maybe about a half. That's why we're doing Tagalog right now in the Philippines, which has Bible translations, but it will allow us to do a number of other translations in the Philippines faster. Once we have all that information, then a computer draft translation can be effectively instantly generated. And the editing of the computer translation of the entire Bible could be done by low-cost mother tongue translators in about 6 months. So we could have a presentable draft translation of the entire Bible with about 1.5 to 3 person years effort. So with our software and our Bible analysis, we are building a Bible translation superhighway. So a superhighway takes a lot of work to develop. You have to do a lot of work before you get anything out of it. But once you have it, it allows people to go where they want to go very fast. So we have some endorsements by people, and this is one of them. This is from Greg Carlson. He's the director of the SIL, or Wycliffe Vanuatu branch. And he writes, "All the Word's new approach to Bible translation is nothing short of amazing. It cuts time and cost for first draft translation. It is already producing accurate and easily understandable translations in a variety of language families. It gives perfectly consistent spelling. Add to that the ability to produce translations tailored for different audiences within a language group, like Christian adults, children, non-believers, etc. Much of the groundwork for one-time analysis and programming has been completed, and when that reaches 100%, we'll see the full power of the new approach. I believe this tool has the potential to make a significant impact on the Bible translation movement. So, since 2007, I've been volunteering in this project, and my goal is to create the to do the Bible analysis, to create what we call semantic representations, which means the representation, internal computer representation of the meaning of the Bible. So this is an example. This was from a community development text, not from a Bible verse. And we go through two phases. So first we write something that looks kind of like English. You'll see in some of the other examples that there are some differences, like we have some square brackets and things in parentheses that give extra information. But it's similar to English. So the phase one here is Paulus started walking from the market to a village named Turpin. Now this is what the phase two looks like. So this is ultimately the representation of the meaning of this sentence in our computer, except that some of it's not shown. You see dot, dot. Each one of these letters or numbers represents some feature. So there's a lot of information here, and it's not showing all of it. So the brackets divide the text into phrases. The basic unit, like I said, is the sentence or proposition. So the double brackets mark a clause. So you see one in the beginning and one in the end. And then there are noun phrases. I wonder if I can point with the mouse. No. So there are noun phrases. You see NP.
Laser pointer? Laser pointer?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great. Okay, so this is a noun phrase marked with NP, and this is a verb phrase marked with VP. And those are the only two kinds of phrases here. And then there are features that that tell information that's needed by the computer. For instance, this letter A here says that this noun phrase is the agent of the sentence. Now, the agent is the one that's acting or doing something, and in this case, it's the, what we would think of as the subject of the sentence. This little s here for market is for source. So we're walking from the market. And this is destination. We're marking to the village. But in our representation, we don't represent it with to and from, because in another language, it would be represented some other way when the text is generated in that language. In the noun for market, from the market to a village. No, here. For the village, this one here, the I stands for first mention. And what that means is that that concept hasn't been mentioned previously. In English, we usually indicate that by using the indefinite article A. And then in walk, the fifth feature is the aspect, and here that's inceptive aspect. Now, inceptive means that you start to do something. So here it's he started walking. So this is a simple case, and the computer would translate this the way it looks like here in the phase one. So when we write the phase one, the computer does some automatic analysis. And sometimes it gets it right. It often gets a lot of it wrong, and we have to go in and correct it. And then we also have to add extra information. Like sometimes there'll be person in one place and people in another, and you have to tell it that these are the same or different. Okay, so like I said, I've been working on the semantic representations, so I'm going to tell you more about that. Generally, we try to use very simple vocabulary. And the reason is to make it easy as possible to generate translations in a variety of languages. As far as possible, try to stick to concepts linked to words in the Longman Defining Dictionary. This is a list of about the 2,000 most frequently used English words. And the idea is that if we use these very simple common words in English, it's more likely that there'll be corresponding words in other languages. The language must be precise. We don't use idioms, which are language specific. We try to use simple grammar, limiting the number of subordinate clauses. And we can introduce optional complex terms, especially if expressed in terms of simpler concepts. So here's an example of phase one. Now this is the translation from the NIV. The list of the men of Israel, colon, and then there are actually a whole bunch of lines of text. So the beginning is, this is from Nehemiah, the men of Bethlehem and Netophah, 108, and then the men of so-and-so, this number, et cetera, et cetera. In our system, the basic unit is the proposition or sentence, so we can't start out with this kind of construction where we have the list. There's no verb in here, you see. The list of men, colon. So I started out this way. The following numbers are the numbers of men of Israel that returned from that land. Then another thing here is it says the men of Bethlehem and Netophah. Now this is actually kind of a complex construction, and what it means is that the total number of men, some of which came from Bethlehem and some of which came from Netophah, we can't express it like that, so we have to break it up. So I did it this way. Men of Bethlehem and men of Netophah returned. The number of these men was 188. So here are some other examples of phase one. In the NIV, it said they had nothing to say. So that's an idiom. And so I expanded it this way. The rulers and officials kept being quiet. Those rulers and officials did not say any words because the things that I said were true. This is another example. In the NIV, it says you shall not, well, I'm not sure which translation. I think it says slander, but I'm not sure. You shall not bear witness or slander. And again, this is a complex concept. So I expanded it. You must not accuse a person of doing a thing that that person did not do. Now, in our system, we can, if we want, define a rule that can convert this and use the complex term slander. So we can define a rule that converts accuse a person of doing a thing that that person did not do to a term, and then the person who's using the translation software can turn on or off that rule. We can also pair complex concepts with simpler ones. In some cases, it might be acceptable to use a simpler term like weapon instead of spear, if the language doesn't have that, or just tree instead of olive tree. So these can be turned on or off by switches. So here's an example of a verse where I used several of these. Therefore, the ruler or governor ordered those men not to eat the special or holy food that the people gave or offered to God. So you can either use the special terms if you have them or not. And finally, there are cases where we need to use alternates. This is a case of metaphor. That person does not walk on the path that people who do bad things walk on. We could create a complex rule, sinners here. This is a metaphor, walking on the path that they're walking on, meaning doing the same things. So we have an alternate here. That person does not join people who do bad things by doing those things. So if the metaphor makes sense in the target language, they can use the first version, or if it doesn't, they can use the second. Now, this doesn't have anything to do with the semantic representations, but I think it's useful for understanding how our software can be used to translate in a variety of languages. This illustrates a transfer rule. There are concepts that you express in one way in English that are simply not expressed the same way in a different language. So we say John is thirsty, but in Korean, the way you express it is you say John's neck is dry. And is dry is actually a verb. They have a verb that means that. So this is a rule showing in our software where the rule inserts the word neck into the noun phrase, the agent noun phrase, and moves the original agent to be a possessor of the neck. So it becomes from John to John's neck. Then there's a second rule that converts this verb be with thirsty into the verb be thirsty in Korean. So we have lots of needs. We need prayer. If you're interested in this project, I encourage you to get on our newsletter list. We have financial needs. We have need help with research, with publicity, and with administration and accounting. If you like the idea of doing the kind of thing that I'm doing, doing the Bible analysis and developing these semantic representations, I'd be glad to help you do that. We need people who like to dig into the Bible, are creative, and are comfortable with using computers. So for more information, this is our website, alltheword.org. There you can see our mission video and videos that describe our system. You can see our financial statements, and this is my contact information. And right here in this chair at the front under the clock, I have a handout that describes our ministry and how our software works.
Thank you, Richard. We have lots of time for questions. Yes, here.
I have a question for you. This is absolutely fantastic. I think I have somebody who may be extremely interested in doing some of this work. But one of the questions I had, in the example you gave from Esther, in the book of Esther, the words pray and God, I don't believe, appear at all. Mm-hmm. So in your example, I don't see how it's going to change any meaning. But just using that as an example, how do you do like a sanity check on this to confirm that you aren't changing meaning?
Well, there's always a question about that, and I guess I got more comfortable with writing the Bible text after, you know, when you look at millions of translations and you see there's a wide variety in how they write things. So I've kind of broken the ice myself in being willing to write the text the way I think it means. I guess the way I would defend it in this case is that the version with the complex term fast doesn't need to have pray. But I think that's what it implies, that if you're fasting, I think we usually think of prayer, fasting is associated with prayer. It's beseeching God to help us, and I think that's what it meant in this case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
We have people, consultants, check on the semantic representations. Yes, we're doing that.
When you've completed this, you're at 20%. When you get to 100%, will you be able to use this for many different, you could go from NIV to King James to something like, you know, so that people would be able to very rapidly go into different kinds of ways of framing, or it's always going to read the same way, essentially?
Well, if we did an infinite amount of analysis, then we can make it come out however you want. If we do it as we envision right now, we'll have certain options, like I mentioned here, where we can turn on or off these complex terms and insert or not insert implicit information. But it's going to be this one translation, aside from those differences.
Actual language in the NIV. So, for example, you couldn't take your approach and map it on, say, Francis Collins' Language of God, and that would be like the second book that they get. You know what I mean?
Well, we would like, I mean, it's an ultimate goal. We'd like to translate commentaries and all kinds of things. In fact, I worked on Bible stories. I have a lot of Bible stories that missionaries are really interested in, oftentimes before they use the Bible. So I think we'd like to do all those things. This is not really from the NIV. I'm just giving you an example. So we look at different translations. I've done a lot in the New Testament. I know Greek. I don't know Hebrew. So I have looked at the Hebrew, actually, in certain times where I want to know, like, the exact details about the number of people and things like that.
Okay. Yeah. How do you deal with ambiguities in the original? Like, for example, in the Greek, there's lots of places where you can't tell whether it's an imperative or an indicative, and where the scholars argue about that, and things like John, where he does a lot of double entendres. I guess you lose the double entendres, but what do you do about the others that are ambiguous?
Well, I can't guarantee that we'll deal with all of those. I'm sure that I miss some. But I try to use alternates. So when I'm unsure of the meaning, then I don't know where my example was. Yeah, then I try to use an alternate. This is different. This is a case where it's a metaphor, and I used an alternate. But there are cases, there's one case where I think I had four alternates, you know, where it was, I can't remember what it was, but, you know, it was one of those verses where you really didn't know what it meant.
Yes, I think you were next.
Yeah. I want to be sure I'm understanding what you're saying here. So let's suppose you have done the analysis for, say, four different books, the Bible and three other books that you want to disseminate, and you've done the analysis for, say, four different languages or the rules. Would you then be able to cross-mix them and get 16 different, each book into each language?
Yes, everything that's been analyzed, then we can run it through the computer and generate a translation.
Powerful.
Yeah.
My understanding, I have a bunch of friends at Wycliffe, is that there are quite a few translation tools that they use already,
mm-hmm.
and the big challenge that they face is predominantly with the languages that where they don't have any scriptures at all, or they actually don't have a written language.
Right.
And the first step they go through, and it takes them quite a bit of time, is to actually generate a written language that they then can translate the Bible into.
Right.
And so forth. So this actually means that you can't accommodate except that subset that has a written language already, right?
Yeah, we don't, we're not the total thing, okay? So we are here to help missionaries. So typically a missionary would go, we're working with people. So all of these projects are working with someone to generate translations. So there may be a missionary who's doing that work of meeting the people, learning the language, but then we could help to make the actual translation go faster.
Yeah. One thing I was confused about, you talked about going through the Bible and language or characterizing it thought by thought. What version or translation or language of the Bible are you using to do that analysis? Are you using Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic? Are you using English? But so, it's a good language translation.
Because so when I do the New Testament, I look at the Greek. But in the Old Testament, I don't know Hebrew myself. I'd like to learn. So what I'm using is I look at NIV, and then I look at some simple translations, because often it's easier to use translations that are for children, for instance. So there's one called the International Children's Version. I like that very much. I use a version called the Easy English Translation, and one other. Oh, and I use something called the Translation for Translators. It adds a lot of implicit information that you don't have in normal English translations.
Is there maybe one last question? At the back.
So for a language where the Bible is literally translated into Kiforian, I can see that there's a significant number of words that don't exist, names of people or places. Do you perceive that to be a significant amount of work, or do you think there's a way to automate that process?
My hope, we haven't done this yet, but there are Bible tools that exist for transliteration. So there are thousands of names, and that could be, that's one potential bottleneck, because it adds a whole bunch of extra words. So there are tools that potentially you can do some translation, and then the computer can figure out how to transliterate based on sound. So just to remind you, so I have these handouts on the chair under the clock, so you're welcome to take them.
So let's thank Richard again. And